morning, and thank you guys for showing up at the very early session to listen to us. So I'm going to be presenting some incubation data that we have showing the influence of goethite and gibbsite surfaces on dissolved organic matter properties. Okay, so dissolved organic matter is the most mobile fraction of organics in forest soils, and sometimes can also be the largest input of new nutrients to subsurface horizons. So it's a very important fraction of organic matter cycling in forest soils. So as this DOM percolates throughout the profile, it obviously interacts with the mineral surfaces, which has induces significant changes in its composition. So we wanted to look at those changes that are induced through interaction with the mineral surfaces, and we examined interaction with goethite and gibbsite surfaces in particular, and why goethite and gibbsite. Well, goethite and gibbsite are ubiquitous in forest soils. They have an abundance of reactive surface area. And they can actually, what these SEM images are actually showing is that they can precipitate out of soil solution onto the surfaces of other minerals, so that at times they can actually kind of dominate kind of the physiochemical environment in soils. So throughout these incubations, we wanted to focus on three main kind of concepts. So as the degree of biodegradation of the bulk soil organic matter progresses, what are the changes in DOM structural and thermodynamic properties induced by interaction with these goethite and gibbsite surfaces? And then as biodegradation increases in degree, how do those changes induced by interaction with the oxide surfaces actually change themselves? So do you guys see progressive differences in the interaction with the oxide surfaces? And then the third point was, do these changes in DOM characteristics actually have a consequence for the microbial communities that are utilizing that dissolved organic matter as a growth substrate? So we have our little microcosm experiment. So basically we're looking at degradation of natural organic matter, which was taken from forest O horizons, so the O A through the O I, and that was kind of chopped up. They're taken from ponderosa pine forests. And then we incubated that with a inoculum derived also from the forest floor material with three different mineral matrix types. So we used a quartz sand as a control treatment because those surfaces are fairly unreactive. And then we have a goethite treatment where the organic matter was incubated with a mixture of goethite and quartz sands, and then gibbsite, which of course was a mixture of gibbsite grains and quartz sands. So these microcosms were incubated for seven different time periods. So we wanted to look at kind of the co-evolution of sorption and desorption processes on these oxide surfaces, the changes in the structural and thermodynamic properties of the dissolved organic matter fraction, and then what are the changes in the microbial community? So the kind of the co-evolution of these three components as biodegradation progresses. So for each incubation period, we had three replicates per treatment for a total of 21 replicates per treatment across all time periods. So after a particular incubation period was finished, a small sample of the actual solid portion was removed for microbial community analysis, and that was performed by pyrosequencing by some microbiologists, Egbert Schwartz and Amy Welty Bernard at Northern Arizona University. The solid portion was then mixed with water, filtered at 0.22 microns, and then that resulting solution, that soluble, water-soluble organic matter, we termed our dissolved organic matter fraction, and then all further analyses were performed on that fraction. So we took these dissolved organic matter solutions, and we looked at a whole slew of different characteristics. We wanted to look at how substrate quality was changing. So we looked at the nutrient content, we looked at the dissolved metal concentrations that might be coming off from dissolution of the goethite and gibbsite, a couple other parameters, and then mostly what I'll be focusing on are changes in the thermodynamics. We used TGDTA, which is a very similar technique to what Garrett was using in the DSC, so looking at kind of the energy stored in that organic matter, in the bonds in that organic matter. And then also to look at structural characteristics, infrared spectroscopy or drift. So moving on to some results, these are the drift profiles, and you can see you have three different treatments, and then moving from the shortest length of incubation at the bottom to the longest time period of incubation at the top. So you can notice a few qualitative differences perhaps among these spectra, but really if you want to get at differences in the abundance of different molecular structure types, you need to do some integration. So when we integrated under the peaks, we found several significant differences in the peaks, mostly indicating that dissolved organic matter or water-soluble organic matter that had been exposed to these or incubated with these goethite surfaces had lower protein and fatty acid content than the DOM from the control treatment. And we also noted that the Gibbsite treatment, or DOM from the Gibbsite treatment, had a higher carboxyl content, which in traditional studies is sometimes correlated or associated with a higher degree of biodegradation. And of course, lower protein fatty acid content in the goethite, we assume was due to preferential absorption of those compounds on the goethite surfaces, which is also backed up by a lot of previous research in kind of like column leaching or batch experiments. Okay, also you may notice a distortion of the carboxyl peak here. So this narrowing of the carboxyl bond is assumed to be due to bonding of those carboxyls with dissolved metal species. So we see evidence of Fe humus and Al humus complexes, so these metal humic complexes which are important for sequestering carbon and increasing its biological recalcitrance. And I should also note that when integrated over time, you can see definitely with increasing biodegradation and increasing time of incubation, you get an increase in this abundance of metal humus complex content. And also I should note that the abundance of these metal humus complexes was higher in DOM taken from the goethite treatment than in either the control or the Gibbsite treatment, with the abundance of metal humus complexes having an intermediate value in the Gibbsite treatment. And this is most likely due to the higher dissolution rate exhibited by the goethite. So there was a greater abundance of metal cations, so more metal cations available for formation of metal humus complexes. Okay, so this is somewhat similar to the profiles you saw with Garrett's work. So basically, these profiles, again, you can see the three treatments and then increasing incubation time from 5 to 154 days. So these profiles, if you integrate under the area of these peaks or the entire profile, you can get kind of an idea of the amount of energy released when you combust a sample. So what is the energy of the enthalpy of combustion, or kind of the energy content of these samples? And looking at just among the treatments, you can see lots of really interesting qualitative differences. Quantitatively, we found that the enthalpy of combustion of DOM from the goethite treatment was actually higher than that of the control treatment, indicating that there might be a higher degree of what they term as thermal recalcitrance, which has been correlated with biological recalcitrance to some degree. And you can also note that the relative abundance of these really thermally recalcitrant compounds is really high in the Gibbsite treatment, and perhaps that is supporting the idea of a higher degree of biodegradation in that DOM taken with the higher carboxyl content that we saw from the drift data. Okay. Oops. Okay, so looking at DOM as a substrate, microbial substrate, this is time average data, so this is averaged across all the different incubation periods, and comparing the dissolved carbon, dissolved phosphorus, nitrogen, and nitrate between the DOM taken from the different treatments. Once again, averaged over time, you see, as you would expect, sorption. What we assume is sorption, but you see significantly lower carbon and phosphorus contents in your oxide treatments as opposed to your control treatment. You also do see some qualitative differences in nitrogen. So you kind of see that exposure to these oxide surfaces is really lowering kind of the nutrient load of that dissolved organic matter. And you also see actually a higher nitrate content in DOM from oxide treatments compared to the control, which we believe is probably due to differences in nutrient limitation, with the oxide treatments being primarily phosphorus limited and the control treatment being primarily nitrogen limited. So the question becomes, so you see these differences in quality between DOM, between the oxide treatments and the control treatment. Does that actually have any effect on the microbial communities utilizing that as a growth substrate? So these are some NMS plots, which most people are probably familiar with, or if you're familiar with PCA plots, very similar thing. And this is representing variation in the bacterial community composition. So variation in communities are plotted along two axes, with points being that are closer together being the communities are more similar, points which are farther apart are more dissimilar. Axis one is primarily correlated with the length of incubation. So you can see even qualitatively the samples are, and I kind of circled them according to the length of incubation. In bacterial communities, as biodegradation, degree of biodegradation increases, regardless of treatment, you get a huge amount of variation in your bacterial community composition. And then you can actually see variation among your control communities and your oxide communities along axis two, primarily on the basis of phosphorus and orthophosphate. So kind of implying that the most important thing to these communities for, or accounting for variation in these communities, is the availability of phosphorus, which kind of fits with what our previous hypothesis about differences in nutrient limitation among the treatments. So when you look at fungal community composition, it's not really as clear, right? You do still get some grouping of the communities according to degree of biodegradation or the length of incubation, but a lot more variation. You do get some very basic separation along axis two, which is correlated with carbon abundance, dissolved carbon abundance. And we got this nice kind of pattern with the control communities, decreasing then increasing along axis two, which was correlated with fluxes of nitrogen and carbon in those systems. And then your oxide treatments are kind of hanging out up here, lower DOC concentrations, perhaps implying that actually carbon availability or substrate availability was an important driver of variation in fungal community. So just to summarize, does exposure to Gertite and Gibbsite surfaces have an important influence on DOM properties? Yes, of course it does. Decreases carbon and phosphorus contents. The way in which Gertite and Gibbsite surfaces influence DOM properties are slightly different. In Gertite, the big players were increases in the general thermal stability of DOM, which again can be somewhat translated in biological recalcitrance. We see decreases in the protein and lipid content of those DOM solutions and increases in nitrate content. Influence of the Gibbsite surfaces, basically we saw an increase in carboxyl content and a really large portion of these high temperature thermally recalcitrant compounds, perhaps implying a greater degree of biodegradation in those systems. Do these changes in DOM characteristics have an influence, or are they important for microbial communities? Yes, they are. We found that changes in DOM characteristics did result in variation in microbial community composition. So thank you very much for listening. Yes, sir.
I'd like to ask about the narrowing of the carboxyl. Mm-hmm.
So the abundance of metal humus complexes was actually not strongly correlated with the total dissolved iron or aluminum concentrations. Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
It was not. And implying that probably those dissolved metals were present in other complexes as well. So especially the aluminum, we found the pH range that this was in, the aluminum would combine with hydroxyls in solution as well. So you get a variety of different compounds. As far as the thermal stability, that was the second question. How do the presence of these metal humus complexes affect the thermal stability or perhaps the character of the thermal profiles? There was a lot of work done, well, maybe not a lot of work, but some people found if you have metal humus complexes, that if you have a large enough concentration of these iron and aluminums, it can shift your peaks within your profile. So iron in general is found to decrease what they call the initiation temperature, or the temperature where that peak occurs, and aluminum will increase. But the concentrations of dissolved metals that we had were actually 3 to 4 orders of magnitude lower than the concentrations that were found necessary to actually cause peak shifts. So I don't think that that's contributing to our profiles, but you know, you can't say. Okay. Thank you.